listening to KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles. The time now is 1 p.m.
From the icy cold curves of Angeles Crest to the sunny shores of PCH and around the world on kpfk.org, this is The Car Show, broadcasting every Saturday from 1 to 2 p.m. here on KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles for over 52 years. Whoever is typing, stop typing. This is a technical glitch here on KPFK. I guarantee you it's the only technical glitch we have ever had on this show, and it will be the only one we will ever have. Let's get right into the introductions. I am your humble host, Mark Vaughn of AutoWeek.com. I am joined this week and every week by my favorite typist in the world, our staff attorney specializing in automotive law, Motor Press Guild member and owner of not one, but two Mazdas, a Miata and an RX-8, Michelle Spencer. Welcome, Michelle.
Hello, Mark. Sorry for the typing, everyone. I apologize.
Yes, we'll cut your salary in half. You don't get salary. We are joined this week. He is back. He was on the road, and he is back. What was he? I've got the resume here is so long. It's just I can't get through it all. Super Street Magazine, one of the OGs at Super Street Magazine. That was my favorite part of his resume. He is a senior analyst at iccars.com. He is host of the famous YouTube channel, Carl Brower Cars. And by now you have figured it out. Yes, indeed, it is Carl Brower. Welcome, Carl.
That last hint was a pure giveaway, Mark. I hope you realize that. Yes, sure. I'm here and I'm thrilled to be on with my two co-hosts again, who continue to put up with me. So thank you both.
And thank you, Carl. Carl just made the, how many hours drive was it, Carl, from Santa Barbara?
Well, let's just say I could have flown to the East Coast and back instead of going to Santa Barbara. When you're in South Orange County, like I am, and you have to go to Santa Barbara to drive a vehicle, and you go on the ground, you don't have your helicopter like some people, you'd be just as well going to the East Coast and going to an airport to go to the same event, to go to the event. Just saying.
Just buy an airplane.
Maybe I'll shop around. At least a hot air balloon. It would still be faster. A hot air balloon would still be faster.
And instead of the car show, it'll be the plane show. Okay, because it's going to be awfully plain. Let's dive right into the calendar section. This first one, I don't even know if it's real or not. It might be a fake. It might be fun. I tried to contact them, have not heard back from them yet. There is an Instagram page called Project Cars Anonymous, all one word. Go check it out. They even have a website, projectcarsanonymous.com, where they sell T-shirts and hats with the Project Cars Anonymous logo on them. So maybe it's real. I don't know. I am not making any guarantees. Hilarious or fake, it is a support group. A group calling itself Project Cars Anonymous uses their version of the 12 steps to help each other get off the project car merry-go-round. I watched several of their Instagram videos. They were funny, you know. If you've those of you who have been through a 12-step program, you will recognize a version of the 12 steps converted to it's like engine swapped to alcohol or drugs or whatever to project car addiction. And it's kind of funny. It's hilarious. It's worth checking out. So go to Instagram, Project Cars Anonymous, and see what you come up with. I don't know. They're supposed to have a meeting tonight in Ventura, but they don't tell you where. You have to sort of be invited. You sort of apply to go. And I applied. I have not heard back. So I might drive all the way up there. Who knows? But it's too much fun. Carl, have you finished your dinner and you can join us now? Carl was eating the habit.
Yeah, I've got a habit of eating habit. And I'm trying not to do it while I'm on the show.
Make sure but I am most... A 12-step.
I may. I think I should. And by the way, I've got two older brothers who are ideal candidates for Project Cars Anonymous. So I would like to maybe get their information and hear how things go if you attend, Mark, because I've got two individuals who should be attending as well.
Okay.
They were the mechanics. I was the driver, and I was happy that we each had our roles because I would have not wanted to ever switch it. That was me growing up with two older brothers. next on our news and events list is BMWs and Bretzels at El Pete, which I think is also known as the Peterson Museum down there on Wilshire Boulevard in the Miracle Mile area. And this is September 28th, 9 a.m. to noon. And you can go down there, and as BMW fans, or, well, I think German fans in general, you would really enjoy this because it's a celebration of precision engineering, iconic design, and of course, carbs. But whether you're arriving in a classic 2002, a brand new M model, or on two wheels with the BMW Motorrad, let's not forget they make those too, all BMW vehicles are welcome. I should actually go there with my 2002 330 CI convertible. Yes, motorcycles too. We're making room for everyone. Enjoy complimentary coffee and fresh Bretzels. Remember, these are the German kind.
What the heck is a Bretzel? Is that like a pretzel, but they wanted the alliteration?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a pretzel.
That is
a pretzel.
Maybe they're in like a shape with like two, you know, cross checker, you know, kind of triangle things, or maybe there's M shaped ones. I don't know. But if they were smart, that's what they would do for their Bretzels. It's like, you want to call it a Bretzel, you better have some BMW element to it. But yeah, you can see everything from some of the finest BMWs ever made to connecting with fellow BMW enthusiasts. There's a few of those out there in the car world. So show vehicle registration, if you want to actually be in the show, is $36, but you can go for free as a spectator. And if you pay $25, you can also go to the museum and check it out after you finish your Bretzel. So
a poster.
Yes,
you do. Yeah, and there's a poster as well as the coffee and Bretzels. So it's interesting. I'm sitting here reading about this thing. I think I'm available on the 28th. Maybe I will go in one of my two E46s. So
that's tomorrow.
Yeah,
Sunday. Yeah. So
you might have to
skip church. Look at this. We're advocating that you skip church. We're going to hear your back.
I'll go to the Church of M Sport. Okay, that's okay.
There you go.
Michelle's got something down in the OC.
Oh, I was just going to say what my parents got a 1983 20i in burgundy. Remember those?
Oh yeah,
we had one of those for a while. It was just
there's a guy who drives by my house lately, like in the last week, in a red 2002. And I don't know who he is. He just looks straight ahead. You know, I'm waving my arms. Stop. Talk to me.
Straight.
Let me drive your car.
And he probably thinks you're some psycho.
Drives on. I want to find out who that guy is.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll flag him. I'll update you next week on that. Okay. Sorry, I interrupted, Michelle. Please.
No, you didn't. You're good. I was just saying, I still wish I had that 320i in that burgundy. Even if it was probably worth like $5,000 now, but who cares?
A 320i, it's worth
$11. $11, yeah, right. That was great. Okay. OC Car Show is coming up at the Anaheim Convention Center this weekend, September.
That's all we know, right?
Through the 28th. And if you want to go, just show up at the Anaheim conventions. That's all we know.
That's all we know. They are the least interested in getting any publicity.
We had nothing.
We got nothing.
I told
you. Go to our little website. They spent a lot of money hiring somebody to draw a big O and a big C. So it looks very nice. But
hey, last time I went to that show, I told you guys on an earlier episode of the car show, I was highly impressed. I was like, wow, this is better than like the last Detroit show I went to. And I'm really pained that I had to say that, but it was true.
Well, how long ago was that? Just
4 years ago.
Okay. That's about the last time I went as well.
Okay.
And I thought it was also very well attended. There were a lot of OEMs, and there was a lot to do for the ordinary car buyer or car enthusiast. So
yeah,
it was good. Now we don't know, since both of us haven't been, if
that knows.
Level of participation is still there.
And if it's really bad, just go across the street to Disneyland.
I was going to say, you can still save the day if it's not a good show. So,
and I think that there's a habit there too on.
Ah, there you go. There's multiple ways to save the day in case the show isn't.
Yes, it is salvageable.
It's good to have Carl fully, you know, carbed or blood sugared or whatever
we need. Yeah, he needs the blood sugar. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, much, much nicer. Okay, we are going to go to another event that is a little bit confusing. So we're just going to do the last day of it. The SoCal Vintage VW Meet is tomorrow, September 28th in Orange, California. That's the city of Orange,
yes,
not the greater Orange County. The SoCal Vintage Treffen, as they call it, is limited to 1961 and earlier, what they call small taillight Beetles and buses, and 1959 and earlier low light Karmann Ghias, or maybe it's just 1959. I don't know. Military vehicles also welcome, early coach builds. And this is taking place in Lakeview Park in the city of Orange. Go to bugin.com, one word, bugin, and check that out.
That's one G in buggin. It's not like, you know, oh man, I'm bugging.
That's true. Bug. Well, they had that whole series of events called the Bug-Ins in, I think it was the 80s. That was the precursor. That was what linked sort of the end of the great muscle car era and the beginning of the import scene was the Bug-In scene. And they, you know, they had a whole culture built around that. EMPI made a lot of money selling you all kinds of carburetor kits. And remember those carburetor kits where you had the bar that went across and you'd hit the throttle and the little bar would twist open both sides of carburetors? And man, you were really styling. If you were really cool, you had the wire on your distributor cap. When you put it on, you wrapped it around a pencil. And so it would look like a mad scientist coil connecting the distributor cap to whatever it connected to. So, okay. Too much ephemera there. We're going to get back to a real thing. Where they actually tell us what's happening. Carl's going to tell us.
Yay.
The Grand National Truck Show on September 26th and 27th. That's like, you know, today, right?
And tomorrow.
Today and tomorrow, yeah.
Yeah, but if you wanted to go to it, it's at the Pomona Fairplex.
No. I'm sorry. Wait, I got to stop you. It's just
Friday and Saturday.
Just today.
Friday and Saturday. Yeah. So it's just today. Yeah. Yeah,
it was yesterday and today. So,
yeah. And it's today until 6. Sorry, Carl. Sorry.
Right. So you got to get out there if you're going to go. But it's the 3rd annual O'Reilly Parts Auto Parts Grand National Truck Show and is presented by Classic Truck Performance Magazine. And apparently, you know, it wasn't always at the Fairplex, or it was before and then it had lost the Fairplex, but it's back there, which is good because, as I said, it's a great venue for car shows, packed with an impressive a lineup of hundreds of trucks, vans, and SUVs from various years, makes, models, and styles. And you can also enjoy live music. You can eat food and have entertainment. And there is a big vendors row, I'm sure, too, if you're looking for various parts and accoutrements to go with your trucks and SUVs and vans. Them too. Yeah. So it's open to the public.
And they sell beer. So.
Prost.
See.
Just in time for Oktoberfest.
Yeah, so you got a bunch more people interested now, Mark. But on September 27th, it's today, which is open from the 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. time frame. So, again, you could get over there and still enjoy that Grand National Truck Show right now.
And that's put on by the same people, of course, who do the Grand National Roadster Show, which is coming up in a few months. Rodshows.com for more information.
So this next one. Oh, I was going to say, do you think they'll have like Gas Monkey Garage and Chip Foose and those guys doing trucks?
I think Chip Foose will, I've seen him doing like little online commercials for it. So
okay,
he goes to the Roadster Show. So maybe, and he has done trucks, custom trucks, but we cannot guarantee Chip Foose will be there.
No.
We don't know about the Grease Monkeys or whoever those guys are.
The Gas Monkeys. I almost said it.
Good. You see, you didn't say it and you're not typing. You're making progress. You could go to the Project Cars Anonymous and, you know, they would clap for you.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to admit that I have a problem. So
that's the first step. First step. All right. If you do not have a problem, a little bit I don't know, cooler. I don't know. I kind of like it. Arts Center 2025 Design Invitational is tomorrow, Sunday, September 28th. From 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. It is a major exhibition of 50 cars and trucks designed by alumni and faculty of the Transportation Design Program. Now, the Art Center, they say, I don't think they say it, maybe I have said it, if you look at any cool car anywhere in the world, it was probably designed by an Art Center graduate. We can say that because what is the one in Detroit, CCI or CCS? I can't remember. College for Creative Studies, CCS in Detroit. They also have a design school. There are a couple of others around the world, but apparently most of the cool cars were designed by Art Center alum, and those cool cars will be on hand at the Art Center Hillside campus tomorrow from 10 to 2. The address, 1700 Lida Street, LIDA, in Pasadena. Registration is required. You cannot just show up. So you want to register at artcenter.edu and then do a search through there. You can get in for only $35. That's not bad. You can meet the guys who design these cars. I think I can safely say Peter Brock will be there. He's there always. And he's a great guy to talk to. Happy to talk to anybody. You always see Franz von Holzhausen there, who is now at Tesla, formerly at Mazda. Who else? Who else do we see? Henrik Fisker has been to every one of these I have ever been to. I can't guarantee he will be there, but just go up and talk to anybody, and it's probably some famous designer. So check that out. That is tomorrow, Sunday, September 28th, Art Center Design Invitational. Go to artcenter.edu. Carl, what do you think?
Well, I think it sounds cool. There's always a lot of great cars, like you said, at that event, and a lot of great designers who can tell you the stories behind the cars too if you go. So I love the Art Center of design. We can also, though, if you want to wait another week or so, go to the Hot Wheels Legends Tour for 2025. This is October 4th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Mattel and Hot Wheels headquarters, which maybe you do or don't know that if you're listening to this show, the Los Angeles Car Show, but it's at 2031 Mariposa Avenue in El Segundo, California. So the fact that the headquarters for Mattel's Hot Wheels is right here in town, I mean, if you're a car person, you just have to go. You know, how many people can say they live in the hometown of Hot Wheels? The 2025 Hot Wheels Legends Tour is a traveling car show that rolls into Los Angeles area with a free live event on Saturday, October 4th. And the Epic Global Contest offers custom car builders a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to have their passion projects turned into the next Hot Wheels die-cast toy car, which is a really cool concept or idea that they're doing that.
And this is the last stop on the Hot Wheels Legends Tour. They've been all around the country, and at each stop, they curate some entries each one of these stops has a winner. And then this one will have, I think, does this one have all the winners? And then they pick the one car that is going to be made into a Hot Wheels diecast. That's the point of the Hot Wheels Legends Tour.
It's the finale. You're going to be at the finale. I mean, it's, you know, it's your hometown if you're hearing this in Los Angeles, and you get to see the culmination of the whole tour. So you got to go.
And I've gone to this before, and it was at the Walmart parking lot up in Santa Clarita when I went. But it wasn't the final. The final that year was in Vegas. But they pick like six nationwide, like one from each stop on the tour. And so if this is the last stop, they'll have the six there. And then they have judges, and the judges meet and all this stuff. And then they, you know, it's very exciting at the end of the day when they finally reveal who gets to be a diecast.
It's a very cool idea. I like the idea that they're, you know, taking somebody's design and turning it into an actual Hot Wheels car. But it's a family-friendly event. It has a bunch of unique custom cars from across the state. It's got play spaces for kids and an array of on-site experiences and collectibles exclusive to the tour. But I do think one of my favorite aspects of it is the life-size Hot Wheels cars. I've seen those before, and it's pretty amazing when you see cars that you remember pushing around on the orange track, and all of a sudden there's a full-sized one right in front of you. It's pretty cool.
It is really funny.
All right. Good. I don't know why they don't just do all six of them. I mean, how hard can it be to make a die-cast model? But I've never made one myself. Speaking of die, we're almost out of time here. Speaking of die-cast, another Peterson event which it's really unclear what it is. It's called the Diecast Club Cruise In and Larry Chen book release Sunday, October 5th, 12 p.m. to 5 p.m. at the Peterson Automotive Museum. I don't know if it's just a car show for little diecasts or if it's a full-size car show. They don't say. So that's one thing. Another cool event, Thursday, October 9th, Moto Social, 7 to 9 p.m. at Bob's Big Boy in Riverside on Riverside Drive in San Bernardino, 4211 Riverside Drive. That's really cool. Put on your calendar that the Japanese Classic Car Show is Saturday, October 11th at Marina Green Park in Long Beach City. In the LBC. Is that what you say? Yes. Ugh. In the LBC. That is a really cool event. Willow Springs Grand Reopening is happening October 11th. Same day. You can get new tickets. You can get tickets at eventbrite.com. Bright is spelled B-R-I-T-E, all one word, eventbrite.com. The American Honda Collection Hall is having another event October 18th, 9 a.m. to 12 noon there. You see our buddy Carl Poli, who puts all that together. That is always a good event. Thousands of people, hundreds of cars. Formula Drift returns to L.A. October 17th to 18th. We're just getting you ahead a little bit here. Okay, let's dive. Shall we dive right into the news?
Yes. What, we have something about the Ferraris.
You want to say that's still in the calendar section. We could.
November. Sorry.
Yeah. That's way the heck up there. November 2nd.
That's November.
The Ferrari Club makes a drive to the Santa Paula Airport on the same day that the airport does an open house. So a lot of the guys who have airplanes open the doors of their hangars, show off their planes. The Ferraris are parked right down the middle of it. It's a great excuse to get out and ride your motorcycle or classic car up there. They have a restaurant. You can get a greasy hamburger like the one Carl just ate and have a good time. I've been up there on a motorcycle. I'm thinking of going up on motorcycle on a whatever I can get my hands on. Maybe the Suzuki will be running by then. Who knows? It sometimes runs, sometimes doesn't. Sunday, November 2nd at the Santa Paula Airport from 10 to 2. That's always fun. And, Michelle, Seven Stock. Tell us quickly. We're 2 minutes over time here. Tell us about Seven Stock.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, well, Seven Stock is November 22nd. It's closer to Thanksgiving than normal. It will be in Orange County at a private park. I have contacts who that's all they would tell me is it's going to be at a private park. They will announce the actual location soon.
Okay. Well, that's good. That's good. Now into the news section, 2 minutes late, 2.5 minutes late. We are going to start out with some sad news, I am afraid. And this guy was an Art Center alum too. And he designed and gets credit for designing one of Michelle's cars, the Miata. And yes, that's right. I'm talking about our good friend, Tom Matano, who is a designer credited as father of the Miata, has sadly passed away at the age of 77. He died on September 20th. He was a good guy. We have all met him and talked to him a lot of times. He was always upbeat, cheerful, and, you know, glad to talk to you and had something funny to say. Designed the Miata. He had quite a life story. He was born and raised in Japan. He used to look at American magazines and look at the pictures of the cars that we had over here. At the time, they were big tail fin cars, and he just fell in love with them, decided he had to get over here. Rather than fly like everybody else, his uncle had a freighter. So he came over on an ocean-going freighter to the United States. He traveled around a little bit. He went to a language school for a while. He had just graduated with a degree in engineering in Japan and then came over here, went to a language school, learned English, went to Art Center College of Design, and went from there to General Motors, first in Detroit and then at Holden in Australia, then to Mazda, where fate collided there, and he wound up on the team that designed the Miata, along with Bob Hall and Mark Jordan and a whole bunch of other guys. Mm-hmm. And he did that. Yeah, it was like a gift to anybody who likes cars. I got to It was. Yeah, Michelle, you really enjoy your Miata, don't
I was going to say, you know, 1989, he was inspired by the Lotus Elise, actually. Did you know that? To design the Miata. Yeah. And he conceived that design as well as the RX-7, the FDs, the really classic design that everyone loves, and that those are the highest valued RX-7s on the market right now. So he's the guy behind that one too. So to me, he's just got a great eye. You know, he launched those two designs and they've absolutely met the test of time.
And so he did the RX-7 as well? The FD is the really swoopy, cool one, right?
Yeah,
the last generation one that everyone loves.
Is the nicest.
Early 90s. It was the design for, yes.
It was good enough. Hey, it was good enough for Vin Diesel in the first Fast and Furious. So
there you go.
Vin Diesel gave it two monosyllabic grunts. So that's how you tell he really likes something.
But Matano-san gave so many smiles to so many people through that little car, the Miata. It brings me to tears. I've had mine for almost 10 years now, and it's just a joy. It is a pure joy to drive. Jinba Itai is their philosophy. It's supposed to be like you're riding your horse. And it just brings a smile to your face to be driving a Miata or be tortured as my passenger.
I remember when the Miata came out, it came out about the same time I started working at Auto Week in 1989. And one of my first stories at Auto Week, first cover story, was on the Miata. And I'm driving around in Detroit in the snow in a rear drive Miata with skinny tires, having a blast. It was just hilarious.
That sounds fun.
So I got to thank Tom Matano for that.
I might have to go to Detroit sometime and see my daughter and drive around in the snow with my Miata.
The snow is fun. I mean, we say that living here in Southern California where it never snows, but for us, getting out there, it's a blast. Speaking of blasts, Carl, tell us about the news update, the EV tax credit.
What EV tax credit? There is no EV tax credit. No. Okay. There still is technically as we have this show and as we're speaking to you right now, but not for long. It's going away on the 30th. That's in about 3 days. And if you have been trying to save some money while buying an electric vehicle, there's a $7,500 federal credit that you can still get as you hear my voice, unless you're listening to it in the archive off the website. But you won't be able to do that after the 30th of September. So if you want an electric vehicle and you want to save money, I would highly suggest getting to your dealer ASAP, and we'll see what's left to choose from and all. That's always that kind of balance, right? Do you go early when you've got all sorts of choices, like people who were buying their cars 2, 3, 4 weeks ago, well before, you know, dealer supply ran out, and then not get as good of negotiation on the price? Or did you try to find a dealer who's got a bunch of extra electric cars left over? They know they're going to have trouble selling them starting October 1st. And maybe you can pick up one of those and get a good, strong negotiation.
Who knows? You know, but my understanding, Carl, is that as long as you go in and sign the paperwork and make the order before that date, then you're still allowed to get the tax credit. Is that right?
This is true. You can also close the deal without actually having the physical car there to take possession of before the 30th, if you want to. And so you could theoretically go order your, you know, Cadillac Optic, and maybe it would take months to get to the dealership. But if you closed all the deal on it and financing, I think you have to pay at least part of the way for it and the whole thing, then you're good.
I think our listeners all go out and buy an EV just to bother Carl. That would be you hear that? Hear that sound he's making? It's great.
Yeah.
He'll make that sound for every one of the listeners who buys an EV. So
hey, I don't have a problem with EVs. I have a problem with them being in.
Here we go. Here we go.
Unfairly pushed on the market.
24 minutes later, he's still talking.
But if you have a situation where an electric vehicle serves your purpose, then I think you should buy an EV. I leased a Fiat 500A for 3 years.
We're going to find out, right? Starting next week, there's no more incentive. I think California, does California still have a tax credit for this?
So our lovely governor said he was going to make sure they did do something a while ago. And then the latest news I heard is that, well, never mind. We're not going to be able to do anything. So
no money, no money. You're on your own, EV buyers.
Well, what did you bought
Mitsubishi IMEVs back 20 years ago?
See, if you had foresight like Mark Vaughn, then you would already have your EV from you'd have had an EV 10 plus years ago. But I think what's going to be interesting to see is what they do with the prices, because I think you probably remember this. Both of you might clearly remember this. But when the last $7,500 credit ran out, if you were an automaker and you got over 200,000, I think, volume sales using the credit, it started to like half every quarter, throw you 750 and then half again. And then eventually it was gone. And when that happened before, what did Chevrolet do with the Bolt? Do you guys remember?
They
killed it.
No, they dropped the price $7,500. It was like, really, guys? So are we just kind of surrendering to the fact that the business model for this vehicle doesn't exist, and you're just pushing them out the door and you don't care about making money because the fact that you lost the $7,500 credit. So you just dropped the price $7,500 the day after that went away. Come on.
They didn't care about it because they had to, keep up with the standards. They had to put something in their lineup.
And that's a great point. And that's a really important point, Michelle, because the other side of this equation is the carrot and the stick. The carrot is the incentive to get people to buy them. The stick is government regulations that say, if you don't build these as automakers, we're going to fine you. And that's going away too. And that's why my theory is that from the 8% peak where we kind of stalled nationally for new car EV market share, we're going to fall, well, probably to like 1-3% for the next few months.
It's 10% according to J.D. Power and Cox Automotive. 10%.
Yeah, like this past month when everyone's rushing out to buy.
Hey, I'll take whatever statistic I can get. Okay.
You know, remember, like they say, folks, there's lies, there's damn lies, and then there's whatever Mark Vaughn's saying. But anyways, EV.
Carl has this vision of a smoldering, smoking earth, and he's standing there somehow profiting from it, counting his money as all the last of the marsupial mammals pass away due to lack of oxygen. But Carl will have his muscle cars.
That's right. But I'll still be able to say, ha ha, I was right. People didn't buy EVs.
He'll be the last person left alive saying that. And then he'll run out of oxygen.
Yeah, that's right. With my glasses that I've stepped on, so I can't read any more books. But yeah, that'll be
Twilight Zone reference. How many got that?
Yeah, so you won't be eating any more burgers.
Speaking of Corvettes, Michelle, what's the news?
Speaking of gas, gas guzzlers, let's go to Corvette. Okay, so GM, you might remember last week, GM issued a recall for certain Corvettes, 2023 to 2025 Z06s and 2025 to 2026 ZR1s. However, they seem to have gotten close to a fix for the gas. When you're pumping your gas, the fan that's located right near the gas
overflow orifice.
Yeah, right. Okay. The orifice. God, that's not.
She's going to laugh now too much.
I can't get through this. Can I get through
orifice? You can say that. That's not one of the seven deadly words. Oh, she's checked out now. She can't speak.
So, okay, the cooling fan. They have figured out a fix for the cooling fan that won't keep running after you turn the car off and you're putting fuel in to your Corvette. So call the Chevy dealer, see if they have any appointments, that if they're starting to take appointments for the recall fix. If you have one of these Z06s or ZR1s.
Okay,
we like the fact that there was a cooling fan causing a fire. There's some good irony there. You got to admit.
Yeah, because it would blow the gas onto the hot components. Brilliant, people.
The cooling fan keeps starting fires. Damn it, we got to fix the cooling.
That was just like if the fuel filler neck overflowed, right?
Right.
That's the gas that got fire. But I guess it doesn't matter where the gas catches fire.
It was blowing.
Once it catches fire, you have a much bigger problem then.
So GM didn't go with the stupid Corvette owners. You're filling it up wrong. They didn't go with that excuse on why the cars were catching fire.
The customer is right.
Stop spilling gas, guys, and your car won't catch on fire. Now, there's incentive. I mean, isn't this a rare commodity that we have to get out of the ground? If you're spilling it, maybe you deserve to get, okay, sorry. Maybe I went too
so far. You're not going to insult the Corvette owners, and but GM does know their audience, apparently.
Yes.
And they're going to take care of
it. They fixed it. The important point is they're going to fix it.
Yes, they're not going to be judgy. They're going to fix it.
Right.
Okay. All right. Speaking of nothing, I guess. There's no segue for this one. Metro Gold Line Extension has opened all the way to Azusa. I know this is a car show, but, you know, trains are kind of interesting. They celebrated the grand opening of it's not the Gold Line anymore. It's the A Line. Because what they like to do is get everybody familiar with a name and then change it. So the former Gold Line, they couldn't call it the G Line. Wouldn't that have made more sense? No, it's the A Line. It goes, so you can now ride all the way from East LA, come back into Union Station, and then get on sort of like the 210 East and go all the way to Azusa. That's $1.5 billion and to get 9 miles extended. For a total to the existing 48.5 mile A line, again, formerly the Gold Line, and extending service from Pasadena's current terminus and all the way to Azusa. Stations will be or are in Glendora, San Dimas, La Verne, and Pomona. And when was the last time that there was a rail service to all the way to Azusa? Anybody? 1951. What was the name? What?
I was going to say 1950.
But what was the name of the light rail service?
Got me.
Pacific Electric Railway, the Little Red Cars. Okay.
The Little Red Cars.
The Red Cars.
Yes.
So what you're saying is the high-speed rail is about to be done in California. Oh, wait. Sorry. I'm getting them.
No. No, they diverted the funding. We lost our funding. Yeah. But no, all the electric rails in the LA area were done in by the greedy people who wanted to sell tires.
That's a myth. That was a myth propagated by I don't know who, but actually people just wanted to drive your cars because you could get a car all of a sudden. It was the 50s. Yeah. Everybody was prosperous, making money. We all had good union jobs in the airplane factories. And
we could move to the suburbs outside.
Yeah,
we moved
to the suburbs, and you didn't have to wait for a bus or wait for a train. You just got into your beautiful new Buick and drove into work, or your Chevy or your Oldsmobile. Or if you were really cool, you had a Pontiac. All right. Speaking of, okay, we opened up more rail. We are closing a couple of roads here. Highway 2 is still, I just checked, still reclosed. So from Isolated Saddles to 5 miles west of Big Pines. For a while there, they got it all working, and I drove on it all the way from La Cañada to Wrightwood and back. A beautiful, empty section of lovely forest up there. You can no longer drive on it because they are working on it. They say, due to emergency repairs, that's all Caltrans is saying, motorists are advised to use an alternate route. Yeah, like the Pacific Crest Trail. Okay, another one that washed out, and Michelle told me about this one, Highway 38 to Big Bear was washed out from rain that came from Hurricane Mario. Mario, who can say that?
You.
Apparently me. I'm the only one. It's closed from 2/10 of a mile east of Angeles Oaks and all the way up to Big Bear. So just go up 330 to Big Bear. 330 is a much better road. It's like four lanes wide, and you can like pass people, and it's... It's nice. And of course, since we're talking about roads, Highway 1 in Big Sur, yes, it is still closed, but we have an opening, approximate hoped for opening date of March 2026.
Oh gosh.
That might be open for like 2 weeks, and it'll rain again and some other
Invoke Curly. The winter's not over yet. Okay.
Remember plate tectonics. Okay. The North American plate is sliding over the Pacific plate, pushing itself into the Pacific Ocean, which is eating it up. And right there is where we have a highway that keeps getting washed into the sea. So
what could go wrong? As
March 2026, get up there in your Miatas and drive all the way to Big Sur.
In honor of Matano's son, yes.
In that two-week window before it gets closed again from another slider.
Right.
Great, but yeah.
P.S. I'm waiting for somebody to organize a Miata-thon in honor of Matano-san.
That's a good idea. Why don't you do it?
Yes. Okay. Well, I'll quit my job and do that.
You have two Mazdas, Michelle.
I know.
You are the one.
Well, all Mazda. I could.
You are the one with the two models.
I'll give my notice on Friday and get on that.
There you go. So tell your boss you got important things to do, more important things to do.
Because I do, actually.
Yeah, you have a job. You have a job. Okay. Last week, I was in New York for BMW's Neue Klasse. As you know, Neue Klasse 50 years ago. Was that, Carl? What was the first Neue Klasse 50 years ago? Is it the 320? Somebody ought to know that.
50 years ago would have been 75, right? So that sounds right. Yeah, 3 Series.
Yeah. So the 3 Series was the big new thing that was coming out then. And it was sort of revolutionary. It was showing that BMW, because the 2002 was getting old and they had to replace it with a quote unquote modern car. So the first Neue Klasse, which means obviously new class, was introduced 50 years ago. And this is the rebirth of the Neue Klasse. It is the tech-laden BMW iX3. Now, in addition to many other things, this is perhaps the longest introduction of any vehicle ever. They've been doing introductions of this car for, I don't know, 3 years or something.
The slow tease.
Yeah, but it's coming out. It's a 2026. So we'll be getting it next year. So look for more introductions of it. It is an electric car. The first one is an electric car. It is built around a new chassis where the battery pack is a stressed member of the chassis, and it'll get good range. And they're expecting it to cost about $60,000. The first one will be a dual motor. So the full name is iX350 xDrive. So that's a dual motor with 108 kilowatt hour battery, good for 400 miles of range. And that's just okay. So that's the electric car part of it. It's not just the electric car. It's a whole bunch of other systems. One third of it is made from recycled materials. And that was one thing that BMW wanted to show off and brag about, was they like the wheels of this car are from recycled materials. The seat fabric, all the other stuff is all from recycled, because that is you save money. You not only save money, but you save resources on so many parts. If you don't have to go out and, you know, mine the cobalt, they have those poor little kids with the woven basket digging in a hole for the cobalt people. If you can recycle the cobalt from your old battery to make a new battery, then, you know, that saves everybody money, makes everybody happy. We will probably get to drive this thing. I don't know when, not for a while, maybe in November, I think, which is 2 months off. And then it'll be in showroom in summer.
Car sounds kind of trashy to me, but anyways.
Trashy. That's the best you could come up with.
You know, that's a recycled joke. Come on.
Sorry. I think
Carl's back to the hamburger was recycled.
Sometimes I go back to the well and keep pulling the same thing out. So what do you think of the styling, Mark? I'm curious.
It just looks like a crossover utility vehicle. The interesting thing on the inside is that new panoramic dashboard that has.
Yeah, I have seen that. That's wild.
It has. I got sort of a walkthrough, a sit through of that. That looks kind of cool. There's a little face, a little alien looking face that follows you. Its eyes follow you as you move.
Well, that's creepy.
It was creepy. And I told the guy, hey, that's creepy. And he says, oh, you can get rid of it. And it's actually just replaced with another thing that kind of, it wants to let you know that it's listening to you, which I guess is creepy too. But then there's a separate screen, which is a parallelogram screen that, you know, it has your usual stuff on it. It's in many ways, it's sort of just an electric SUV, but in other ways, there's a lot going on there with the recyclability, that panoramic screen. And in addition to that, it has a nice head up display. I always say heads up display, but you only have one head, so it's got to be head up display. So it's an interesting car, 60 grand coming next summer. Maybe we'll get to drive it in November. We'll see. So that's what I saw in New York. What else do we have here? We have, we only have a little bit of time left. let's just quickly say the Acura ZDX EV is dead. Carl, are you happy?
I never celebrate any car's death.
You're happy. Look at him. He's smiling.
Me? No, not at all.
I think it's the gas from the burger.
That's probably what it is. No, but that's bad because I'm emitting CO2. So the ZDX was interesting because this is the second failed version
that's
of that.
Not all he's emitting.
you remember there was a previous ZDX, wasn't there, Mark?
Right.
And it's interesting.
That sold like, I think, two or three cars.
Well, wasn't that thing basically a rebadged Crosstour, a Honda Accord?
Yeah, it was a Honda Crosstour, and they were trying to sell it as a luxury thing.
As a premium vehicle. But here's the funny thing is that that vehicle predated like the X6 and a lot of these other like sport-oriented, you know, or coupe-looking SUVs.
Yeah, BMW.
And it was like BMW sells a whole bunch of those, but also Mercedes has some too.
Mercedes too, yeah.
So it's like they were
like really well-engineered, well-designed, powerful, strong, genuine luxury cars. And the ZDX was kind of like a Honda, right?
Ah, see, you might have tapped into the problem. But I was just going to say they were ahead of their time. You know, they were the original Star Trek series of crossover or coupes. But whatever, it's gone. That one went away. When the name came back, I remember thinking, do you really want to use a name that kind of failed so badly in the market that you had to cancel it shortly after you launched it? And apparently they did.
And they canceled it.
That's a little, it's Kurt.
I'm not really laughing about the EV element of it dying as much as the fact that they've, it's like, okay, memo to all of our Acura future employees, never call something the ZDX again. Okay. That's your Edsel. Leave it in the past.
That's it. We've got, about 14 minutes here. And, Carl and I were both, on separate waves of a huge Toyota, boondoggle. Up at Sonoma Racetrack. And Carl, which one should we wade into first? Do we want, actually, let's just talk, I don't know. We talked about a Supra last week. And what do you want to talk about, the Corolla GR or the Corolla Cross? Which one comes first?
Well, let's do the Corolla GR first because I feel like that story is simpler. There's more into the Corolla Cross. Right. So let's just knock off the GR Corolla, which to me, the story there is, if you bought the first year Corolla GR, the first year GR Corolla, you feel like a sap. Is that how I shouldn't?
No.
Maybe that's not what Toyota was going for.
No, and I will address that sapness when you're done because
okay. Okay. But it was interesting that I've never had this happen before. I've never done this before where a car company takes you and to an event and they take you to a racetrack so you can really experience a performance car all out. And then they have all the different years of a car. This hasn't been out that long. 23 was its first year. So, and they give you a 23, a 24, and a 26 Corolla GR to drive around Sonoma Raceway and push hard so that you can see how much better they kept making it in from 23 to 24 and then from 24 to 26. And you could feel it. I could feel the car was more buttoned down and more precise and better controlled each time I went to a later model year. So that was good. But then I thought to myself, boy, you know, if you just bought a GR Corolla in 23, that wasn't that long ago. What does that mean? How happy are you now that you bought that first year GR Corolla? But Mark, you answer that question for me, please.
Yeah, I had a different take on it. So they lined them up. They had a 23, a 24, and a 26. And, you know, you had to drive them around Sonoma. Got to drive them around Sonoma Racetrack, which is a great racetrack, by the way. And you had to do it in chronological order. So I started out with 23. The 23 had a manual transmission. Is that right, Carl? That's what I remember.
Yeah, the 23 and 4 had manuals, yes.
Yeah, and so I'm going up the, you know, around the track, up. You go around turn one, you go up that hill, and it's blind, and you just trust in the Lord that it does, that they haven't changed the layout since the last lap, and you hit the apex, and you drift out to the outside. It's really fun. The track is just full of corners like that. So much elevation change and everything. So with the 23, there was more body roll. There was dive and squat. Shifting with the manual, it was just a lot more involved. Now, you get in a 24 model, and they had done some improvements. You could feel that. I think my 24 had the automatic transmission, which is, you know, the paddle shifting. It was pretty fast. It was quick. So you're going faster. You're going smoother. And then the 26 model, what they did was they added all kinds of stuff to make it perform better at the Nürburgring. which is where they race. And in fact, I went to the Nürburgring 24 hours this year. And I think I told my story that I was standing out there in the pits at like 2 a.m. And I look over and there's Akio Toyoda next to me in his driving suit. And I said, konnichiwa. Security wrestled me to the ground.
I was going to say, yeah. Security! In the pits!
Stop wearing this driving the Yaris.
Akio was driving the Yaris, which is powered by the same... This is a three-cylinder turbo on both the Yaris, that which we can't get here, and the GR Corolla, which you can get here. 300 horsepower. That's 100 horsepower per dinky little cylinder. It's a 1600 cc. So what's that divided by three? Michelle, start doing math. And
something around
533, right?
It's like Moto 3 motorcycle cylinders lined up. So yeah. And the interesting thing I thought about that, let's just do a sidebar on the engine, was you would expect that, like the first, like the S2000, you had to have it about 9,000 RPM before you felt any horsepower. Yeah, it had a lot of horsepower, but you couldn't use it most of the time. With this one, they've managed to spread it out. I think peak power output was 6,500 RPM, and I think peak torque was 3,000. So, you know, you didn't have to wind it out to get some response from it. I really enjoyed driving that. And as I said, the changes made to the 2026 model were just to make it last longer at the Nürburgring, in my opinion. They stiffened it up. I think the rear suspension, they stiffened or lengthened or repositioned with the trailing links, if I'm getting those right. They added more cooling. And what else? They did a whole bunch of stuff. But my opinion was that they just did all that to make it a better race car at the Nürburgring. I enjoyed, of those three cars that I drove, the GR Corollas, I enjoyed the 2023. I don't know. It was more involved. I like, you know, feeling, maybe I like the feedback. Maybe I'm not so sensitive to feedback in a car. I like to get more feedback. So I like leaning around the corner just a little bit more. It's not like it's cornering on the door handles or something. But I enjoyed the 2023 more than the others. And remember that racing engineer guy who was there? And he asked me what I thought of it. And I told him that. And he was like,
oh. Yeah. Yeah. You're so kind of blowing up. You're kind of destroying everything we put our time and energy into for the last 5 years or three years.
And then security wrestled me to the ground. And I was
like, once again.
You know, yet again, yes. You know, bad luck with Toyota. So that was my take on it.
Yeah.
Well, one thing I would say is it's funny you say that because there's a whole thing, you know, we don't want to go too far into your engineering suspension weeds here because we'll lose everyone, including ourselves. But you can make an argument about a softer suspension that will move around more depending on the kind of road you're on or the kind of driving you're doing, where the vehicle basically will kind of do what you're describing, Mark, which is it'll like work with you more. It'll move around and if you know how to move it around properly, whereas a stiffer suspension, it'll kind of fight you. And if you're trying to, you know, balance the car better and all, you can't get it to lean as much or you can't set it up for the corners easily. So there's all sorts of different philosophies on how to properly tune a suspension for going around a racetrack or not going around a racetrack. But the one that I remember, I think it was the 24, it might've been the 23, coming off, I don't know what turn it is, Mark, but you're going to remember it's the pretty serious downhill lefter. It's a blind downhill.
The carousel, turn six.
Yeah. And I was able to get into that thing with a lot of speed. Like, you know, it's one of those things where when you start nailing corners correctly, then you have to recalibrate because you're carrying more speed coming out of them than you were because you did the corner so well, you're now carrying more speed. And I came out of that corner really well. You know, I hit the line perfectly. And then of course I'm like, well, I'm at the apex and I floored it and I'm coming around that corner and there's still all those lateral G's. And that car went into a major four-wheel drift, like all the way, like across the you know, at the bottom ground level.
I don't
think
that's the fast way around the track.
No, it is not. And it was funny because I never really, I'm going to tell myself, was that close to actually losing control of the car. But it was just kind of like I'm counter steering and I'm going fast. I'm in one of the fastest four-wheel drifts I've ever been in and stuff like that. And I was able to control it and stuff and balance it out. And I'm in there, you know, nervously giggling as it's doing.
Well, that's the thing about these street cars. They're on street tires, and you can slide them all over the place, and they're very forgiving. If it's been the racing slicks, you would have been into the wall.
Right.
And your name and your picture would have gone up there in the press center. for all
time. Yeah, well, it's that nasty thing. When you have higher lateral Gs that you achieve before it breaks away, what's it usually like when it finally does break away, Mark?
Yeah, you're dead. I wouldn't know because I'm so cool, I've never spun out.
Oh, all right. Really?
On the other Corolla extreme, they also introduced the brand new 2026 Toyota Corolla Cross. Now, I don't know. I think I was a little bit too harsh in my Autoweek.com story on this. The headline says perfectly inoffensive and built to stay that way. I think it's a great car for young families. I would say that. It rides on the same platform as the Corolla Cross, the GR Corolla and the regular Corolla and every Corolla ever made, and probably 52 other Toyota products all over the world. So what they've done is they've made this thing into, it looks kind of like a crossover utility vehicle, I would say. You can't really fault the looks. At first, I thought when it first came out, the Corolla Cross, I kind of thought it looked a little too much like a ZDX, you know, with that sort of swoopy rear roof line. But this one looks a little more like, you know, an anonymous crossover utility vehicle. It gets a bigger displacement engine, 2-liter gasoline engine driving the front or all four wheels. And it also gets a 2-liter hybrid that comes with three permanent magnet synchronous motors that kick in as necessary for grip, you know, and it starts. You can get a Corolla Cross, a very sensible, reasonable vehicle for your young family, starting at $26,000. I don't know. I think for what it is, it does a very good job of what it's trying to do.
So 100% agree with you, Mark. And what I basically felt like was I actually liked it right from the beginning. They had the press intro in San Diego a couple of years ago. And I was like, this car kind of looks cool. It has fairly good driving dynamics. It's got a CVT. And so I have a kind of official, hatred for CVTs because they literally suck the life out of a car.
I agree. Try to accelerate. I agree. It's not worth the half a mile per gallon more you get.
No, they will destroy whatever fun you thought you were going to have in a car, but they do make the car more fuel efficient, and especially in the hybrid. But I was surprised even in the non-hybrid, it's still kind of responsive. When you floor it, it's not just a pure like soul sucking experience. The car will kind of move forward, especially with the
torque. I must disagree with you. With the gasoline engine, you step on the gas and nothing happens for about a week and a half, and then it starts to accelerate. You know, the rubber bands and the CVT transmission kind of tighten a little bit, and forward progress is detected. We have less than a minute to go here. Carl, thumbs up, thumbs down on the Corolla Cross?
Absolute thumbs up. Don't forget, there's Hyundai and Kia out there, and they produce really high value cars at low costs. And Toyota, as big and powerful as they are, they got to produce high value cars too. And the Corolla Cross, to me, was a nice reminder. Hey, you know what? Toyota can do that too. They haven't surrendered this segment to Kia and Hyundai.
Okay. And you can do that too. If you come back next week to listen to us, be sure and check out our website, which is, it's a long one, The Car Show on 90.7 KPFK FM. Michelle is working on that right now. We want to thank Wendell and Master Control. We want to encourage everybody to stick around for Rhapsody in Black, music that sounds great on your car stereo. And we, all three of us, will see you again next week here on The Car Show.
I was turning the radio dial on the car, trying to find something other than the usual dribble and fluff and nothingness on the rest of the airwaves. And I just stumbled across KPFK, and I was just drawn to it like a magnet, and I was just listening to it intently. And all of a sudden, I said, I have got to pull off the freeway here. I found the nearest telephone booth. I called my wife and said, you have got to turn on 90.7 FM. I will talk to you when I get home. This is incredible. What I noticed was different right away was that people were being interviewed at length. And when they were talking about the purpose for the station, the reason for being was to promote understanding among peoples of all races and from all countries and all classes, and to provide information about the events of the world that were not reported or not reported completely or in depth by any of the other major news outlets, broadcast or print. And I just thought that was phenomenal. And I've been blessed ever since.
Those of us who work in community radio have always understood the power of passionate and committed individuals.
And that's what this time, Fund Drive Time at KPFK, is all about.
If you're passionate about the current affairs and cultural programming that KPFK brings to you every day, come rain or come shine,
then please commit yourself to our future.
Pledge your support to KPFK securely online at kpfk.org